Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. A pleasure to welcome Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Jaffe, who serves as the rabbi, as you sort of heard, the Maimonides Kehillah in Brookline, Massachusetts. That, of course, was founding a sort of crown jewel, I could say, the original founding, Rav Soloveitchik. That's how he got started in Jewish education in the United States. He's the Dean of Judaic Studies at Maimonides School. He's a graduate of Yeshiva University, who has degrees in Bible, Jewish history, Jewish education, learned in the Kol Elyon at Yeshiva University. And he also is a graduate from Columbia University with a degree in English and Comparative Literature, served as the Menahel of the Boston Rabbinical Court, and as director of the Chidon HaTanach in the United States. So a wide and varied talents, and the pleasure to welcome him back to give a shir at Torah Moshe. Vakasha, Rabbi.
Okay, thank you for such a wonderful introduction, and good to see everybody, and welcome. Tonight we're going to discuss a topic which travels all across the Chumash. It's a topic that relates to many different parshiot, even if you've heard the topic before, maybe we'll have a little bit of a new spin on it. And that's the question of how long the Jewish people actually spent in Mitzrayim. And part of why I like this question about how long the Jewish people spent in Mitzrayim is that it's one of those questions where at the start of this shir, you might think that you know which view is the pshat, the simple reading of the Tanakh, and which view is the Midrash, the sort of homiletical extension of the Tanakh. And by the time we're done, maybe you'll see that it isn't so simple. Throughout the shir, I'll be sharing my screen so you can see the psukim of the Chumash in front of me. And I'll also try to put the link in the chat for those of you who find it a little bit easier to click on the link for your own, to check on your own. But before we look at the actual text, I'll open it up to the group. Anyone want to jump in and weigh in on how long the Jewish people actually spent in Mitzrayim, how many years they spent in Egypt?
210.
Okay, so Chaim says 210. Nissan, I see you're nodding your head no.
Well, I assume you want to count from the time of Yosef, even before his sons were born, if you're going to start with that, so it's longer.
Okay, so there's a big debate among the authorities how long the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim. But let's start with a text in Bereishis, which is obviously, not the parshiot that we're reading now. Hopefully you'll see it in the screen in front of you. And I will also try to post it in the chat. Okay. So this is when the Jewish people's descent into Egypt is first predicted. And Hashem says to Abraham in Bereshit, Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'yomer le'Avram, God says to Avram, Yadoa Teda, you should surely know, Ki ger yiyah zaracha be'eretz lo lahem, the Jewish people will be a ger, a stranger in a foreign land, Vavanum, and they will be slaves, V'inuotam, and they will be afflicted, Arba me'ot shana. So that's our first text. And when we look at the first text, it sounds as though, how long are the Jewish people in Egypt? 400 years. Now, I don't want to pick on Chaim, but Chaim said that they were in Egypt for 210 years. Is there a biblical text which says that the Jewish people were in Egypt for 210 years?
No.
Actually... Yeah, Chaim says, no, actually there isn't. It's amazing that when you talk to people and you say, how long were the Jewish people in Egypt? Everyone knows, 210, that's how long they were in Egypt for. But actually, the only pasuk in the Torah, maybe not the only one, but we'll say the only one, the pasuk in the Torah, which describes how long they were in Egypt, says 400 years. So at the start of our class, what I'm going to posit as a place to start is that the pshat, the simple reading of the text, is that they were there for 400 years, and 210 is just some midrash. The Naomi said in the chat that 210 years is the number of years of slavery. 210 years is conventionally the count from when Yaakov descended to Egypt and when the Jewish people left. The number of years of slavery is even less than that. So there we have it. 400 years according to the Torah, 210 years according to the Midrash, and, wait a second. Why did the Midrash say 210? You see, the Midrash has to have a reason why the Midrash says what it says. If the Torah said 400, the Midrash must have had a reason. Anyone have any thoughts? How did the Midrash know that it had to be less than 400 years? Okay, so now we have an opportunity to, so Ben Melech is saying the 400 years is just a possibility. Then we'll come back to that in a second. But first, I want us to look at why I think the Midrash, doesn't want to say 400 years. So I posted it as a link in the chat if you want to follow along in the chat. And now we're going to screen share to a pasuk in Parshat Va'era. Now, Parshat Va'era is a jam-packed parsha. It begins with the Lishonot Chol Geula. It begins with the different languages which indicate the different stages of the salvation of the Jewish people. It has 7 out of the 10 Makot. It's a really jam-packed parsha. And because Va'era is a jam-packed parsha, there is a section which people generally do not study because compared to the rest of the parsha, it is basically a less interesting, somewhat more boring section. But we're going to look at it now because it's so critical in understanding how long the Jewish people were in Egypt. This is Parak Vav, the 6th parak of Va'era, and the 2nd aliyah of the parsha. The Torah says, Ela Roshei Beit Avotam, this is the lineages of the families of the Jewish people. B'nei Reuven before Yisrael. We start with Reuven, the first son of Yaakov, and we have a list of names of his children. We get the names of Shimon's children. Yimuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yachin, Sochar, Shaul ben Aknanit. Is everybody still interested, or your attention already went in a different direction? Okay. Anyway, then we get Ushnei Chaye Levi, Sheva Ushloshim Umeat Shana. An almost irrelevant detail that Levi lived 137 years. Why does the Torah have to say that Levi lived for 137 years? Rashi has an answer, but we'll just pause and we'll ignore Rashi's answer for now and just say the Torah gives us that fact. Now, Levi has a son, Kehat. How long does Kehat live for? Ushnei Kael Kehat Shalosh Ushloshim Umeat Shana. He lived 133 years. I guess they had a good medical plan or they had good genes. And then we have Amram. And Amram lives 137 years. Okay, so that's in Parshat Va'era. We get the lineage of Moshe's ancestors. And we see how long everybody lived for. And this detail that most people gloss over is critical in understanding how many years the Jewish people stayed in Mitzrayim. Okay. Now, what does these numbers have to do with anything? So now we have to do some math, and I'll type the math in the chart, but if you have a pen and paper and you prefer to do it in pen and paper, that's also okay. Levi lives 137 years, and his son Kehat lives 133 years. What's 137 plus 133?
270.
270. Okay. Then Amram lives an additional 137 years. So what's 270 plus 137?
407.
It's 307.
No.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm sorry. My bad. 133 plus 270 plus 107 is 407. Great. Now, how old is Moshe Rabbeinu when Moshe Rabbeinu stands in front of Paro?
80.
80. So 407 plus 80 equals 487. Okay. So Moshe's lineage is important in that it teaches us that it's 487 years between the birth of Levi and Yitziat Mitzrayim. I'm getting did I do the math wrong? I'm getting some shaking heads.
We know that lives of fathers and sons overlapped.
Right. Oh, okay. Very good. So it's not 487 years because a father can't give birth to his son when he's 0 years old. Now, because we need to go, we need the time that Amram and Moshe overlap, and there needs to be some time that Amram and Kahat overlap, and some time that Levi and Kahat overlap. It's got to be less than 487. Actually, it gets worse. Where was Kahat born? Does anybody know? Was Kahat born in Israel or was Kahat born in Mitzrayim? The Torah tells us in Parshat Vayigash that Kahat actually came down to Mitzrayim. So when you factor in the fact that Kehat had to have been one when he went down to Mitzrayim, and let's assume that he was at least 20 when Amram was born, and let's assume that Amram was at least 20 when Moshe was born, we get a very different number from the lineage about how many years the Jewish people were in Egypt. You actually get only 310 years.
No. You have to remove only 40. According to your calculation, from the 407, you have to remove only 40.
No, and because Kehat went down to Mitzrayim. So we counted all of Levi's 137 years as being in Mitzrayim, but we have to start with Kehat because Kehat came down to Mitzrayim himself. So Levi's years are not relevant to our count because Kehat descends to Mitzrayim.
What? If Kehat was born during his grandfather Levi's lifetime, then all the years of Amram are irrelevant for our counts.
That's also true that Amram's years may be irrelevant because if Kehat saw Moshe, that which is not unheard of that a grandfather would see a grandchild, then even Amram's years don't matter. But what's important for our purposes is that also somebody in the chat there are a number of people in the chat who pointed out that I said Amram had children when he was 20, but Moshe has older siblings, so we'd have to add more years. The point of all of this is however you slice the math, it is impossible for the Jewish people to have spent 400 years in Egypt because of the lineage that appears in Parshat Va'era. Notice how at first we thought the pshat was 400 and 210 was just, we don't know where they got that from. Now we see, one second, Chaim, now we see the exact opposite, that the number of time.
No, I can do it now.
So you could take the soup out to cool.
Sorry about that, everyone. Now we see it's the exact opposite. The Torah does not allow for 400 years in Egypt. And the reason why we get a lineage in Parshat Vayera of the Moshe and Kahat 137, 133, is to demonstrate that they were in Egypt for less than the full 400 years. Now, if somebody else was giving this class this evening, you might hear a totally different shiur. You could sometimes give the same shiur 10 times by 10 different people and you have different responses. But I don't see any way to look at the lineage of people and to say that the language is non-specific or unintentional. I mean, there are times where you see words in the Tanakh and they're not meant exactly that way. You know, when Mordechai, you say that Mordechai is Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, people say it doesn't mean son of, it can mean grandson, it can mean descendant of. And sometimes you can say that in Tanakh. But the way Moshe's lineage is presented, and it's presented this way throughout the Torah, Levi, Kehat, Amram, Moshe, there are no intervening generations. It doesn't look like this is about or descendant of, it looks like child of. And therefore, there is no way to say that the Jewish people spent 400 years in Egypt. And again, traditionally, you know, traditional Judaism for decades has basically accepted this as an interpretation that the Jewish people were in Egypt for less than 210 years. Now, less than 400 years. Okay, so then we have to go back to the 400 and figure out where 400 came from. Because if we're convinced that they were in Egypt for 210 years, why does the Torah say that they were there for 400 years? So we're going to go back to Bereshit chapter 15. I will again share it, but Nissan Hershkovitz has already given the answer to how we're going to get out of this, how the Midrash is going to explain the 400 years. And here we go with the screen share. So if we look carefully at the pasuk which mentioned 400 years, we'll see that it's not too difficult to read the pasuk slightly differently. Vayomer le'Avram, Hashem said to Avram, Yadoa teda, you should know, Ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem. Number one, the Jewish people will be strangers in a foreign land. Number two, va'avadum, that they will be slaves. And number three, vi'inu otam, that they will be afflicted. Four, arba me'ot shana. There's three things. They'll be in a foreign land, they'll be slaves, and they'll be afflicted. It's not so difficult to read this pasuk as saying that in the 400 years, these three things will happen, but not that all three will happen in Egypt. And so Rashi and the Midrash say, you know, what this really means is that they are going to be spending 400 years under the decree, but actually the amount of time they're going to be in Egypt is going to be much less. 400 years is a nice round number. It's a nice way for Hashem to communicate to Abraham a solid block of time. And the 400 years will be divided, some of it in Egypt and some of it somewhere else. So to review our first third of this class, we started by saying the Torah must think 400 years and 210 is a midrash. And now we think the exact opposite, that 210 is what the Torah believes, and 400 here means through the various stages of the decree and not exactly the time in Egypt. Yes,
may
go
I
ahead.
Commend you. You, the way you read the pasuk that you just read, number 13, your gimel, you put the etnachta exactly where the Torah put it. There is an etnachta in the Inu Al Sam. This is unique in the Torah because there is no second phrase here. Abama Yashana is its own phrase, separate from the rest of the items.
So, Nisan, I was not even thinking about that point, but that's a great additional point. That the Torah here doesn't say, "Vayomer l'Avram yadoa teda ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem," with a pause, and etznafta is where the primary pause in the Torah is placed when the Torah is read. It doesn't say, "Yadoa teda ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem," pause, they'll be strangers. And then, "Ve'avadum v'inu otam arba mi'ot shana," they'll be slaves for 400 years. But rather, that they're going to be ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem ve'avadum v'inu otam, comma, and then arba mi'ot shana. So even the reading notes of the way this is read and performed in synagogue supports the reading that they were in Egypt, that the 400 years covers all of these things. Now, I have something even more important, though, than this as a proof that the Jewish people spent less than 400 years in Egypt. So far, we looked at the biblical text, but there's one proof that we don't even think about as a proof that they spent less than 400 years in Egypt. This one involves even more math than the last one, sadly.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Marty.
The time that they weren't in Egypt, they were in Canaan. So unless you say that the 400 years start when Abraham came to Canaan, that means that part of the time they were given and part of the time they were not. And that seems illogical.
So Rashi cleans up the logic a little bit and says that it says Zaracha, your children. And so the 400 years starts with the birth of Yitzchak. And that's how we get to 400.
That's interesting in itself, because Yitzchak was somebody who was never outside of Canaan, so he was all the time again. That's great.
So what you would say, you know, if I didn't have the lineage, which is forcing me to read it as less than 400 years, I'm forced to say that Yitzchak is a ger. You know, Israel is still under Canaan. The Jewish people are foreigners. You know, Yitzchak gets into a fight with Abimelech and he has to travel here, has to travel there. Your other option is to say, as Ben suggested earlier in the class, that the 400 years was Hashem's plan and that they spent less than 400 years in Egypt, and that was just Hashem's plan. But it wasn't actually fulfilled. Okay, I'm going to move on to another proof. This one involves even more math. I'm sorry, we didn't advertise that people needed to bring a calculator to this. Now, we know the year that Avram Avinu was born. Thankfully, Avram Avinu was born in 1948, before the founding of the State of Israel. I don't know how anyone remembered that he was born in 1948, but that's very easy for us to remember. Now, Yitzchak is born when Abraham is 100. So that means that Yitzchak was born in 2048. Now, Yitzchak is 60 when Yaakov is born. And that means Yaakov is born in 2108. Now, in Parshat Vayigash, Yaakov goes down to Egypt and Paro asks him how old you are. Does anyone remember how old Yaakov Avinu is when they go down to Egypt? Yaakov says
130.
130. Excellent. Excellent. So that means that Yaakov goes down to Egypt in 2238. That's when Yaakov Avinu goes down. Now, let's say for a second that they spent 400 years in Egypt. So if that's true, then the year of the Exodus would be 400 years later. So that gives us 2638. The temple is built 480 years after that. So that would make the temple being built in 3118. Did I get that right? Yep. The temple stands for 410 years. So that gives us 3528. 70 years in Bavel. So the second temple is built in 3598. And the second temple stands for 420 years. So that gives us 4018, if I did all of my math right. Now, if the second temple is destroyed in the year 4018, what would the Hebrew year be today? Well, let's see. It's right now 2024, and the temple was destroyed in the year 70. So how many years has it been from the year 70 until today? 1955, is that about right? So we'd get a Hebrew year in the 5900s or something like that. Now, does anybody have a Jewish court document in their house? Well, if you have a ketubah in your house, you have a Jewish court document. I'm not going to ask everybody to check it now, but none of our Jewish court documents have the year 5900 in it. So it's amazing that, you know, every elementary school child who writes the date on their notebook and writes that the year is 5784, every marriage document who says 5784, every Jewish divorce document where the divorce document, you know, says 5784, all of those documents are assuming, the math will only work if you assume that the Jewish people spent somewhere in the vicinity of 200 years in Egypt. This is, you know, it's amazing to realize that the Torah says 400, and yet it's so much a part of the entire Jewish tradition that it's 200 years. It's like, if you have to think of one thing that everybody, you know, all Jews basically believe, but yet it doesn't say it explicitly anywhere in the Tanakh, is this particular idea. Okay, so we now had a half an hour shiur, which is a wonderful half an hour shiur. The outcome of our half an hour shiur is we've demonstrated why Jewish tradition, and it's not just the Midrash, but it's all of our documents, assume the Jewish people are in Egypt for 200 years because of Moshe Rabbeinu's lineage. But there's one pasuk that we forgot about that we haven't looked at yet. Now we got to look at a third pasuk, which gives a third account for how long the Jewish people were in Egypt. Not 210 years and not 400 years, but an alternative option. I'll again put the link in the chat for everyone who wants to follow the link, and I will also screen share. And here we have another text. Now, I mentioned that Parshat Va'era is packed, and as a result of the fact that Parshat Va'era is packed, very few people get, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about Moshe's lineage. But Bo is even more packed. In Parshat Bo, you have the three of the Makot, and you have Makat Bechorot, and Korban Pesach, and the Jewish people leave, and the plague of the firstborn, and the blood, and the doorpost, and everything. There's so much in Parshat Bo, we can forgive people for not giving attention to every last pasuk in Parshat Bo. Buried toward the end of the sixth aliyah of Parshat Bo is the following. Pasuk Lamed Zayin of Perek Yud Bet. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael me'Ramesses Sukkosa. They leave Ramesses, they go to Sukkot. Sheish me'ot elf ragli agrin levav mitav. 600,000 men at the age of being able to serve in battle. They take a lot of livestock from Egypt. And then the famous Pasuk Lamatet, they have matzahs on their shoulders and the whole thing, and they held everything. And then we get Umoshav b'nei Yisrael asher yashvu b'mitzrayim. How long were the Jewish people in Egypt? Shloshim shana ve'arba me'ot shana. 430 years. Oy gavalt. 430 years. How do we do? What do we do with 430 years? And maybe we read it wrong. Let's see. No, it repeats in the next pasuk. Vayhi mikesh shloshim shana ve'arba me'ot shana. Again, 430 years. Vayhi be'etzam ayom hazeh yatzu kol tzivaos Hashem mi'aretz Mitzrayim. And then the Jewish people left Egypt.
And it's all Egypt here.
Well, it says at the end of 430 years, you could say at the end of 430 years, since whenever we started the count. I neglected to mention before, you know, I said that this idea, this interpretation, that the real answer to how long they were in Egypt is the short number in the vicinity of the 200s. And the non-literal number is 400. I mentioned that before. This explanation goes back as far as the Septuagint. I neglected to mention that before, meaning this idea that they did not spend 400 years in Egypt, it's something which is not just what we find in our documents today, but it's even a very, very ancient interpretation going all the way back to the early Greek translation of the Torah. We're not even talking, you know, the Midrashim, many of whom are written after the close of the Talmud. We're talking really early that Jews are saying this. But what are we supposed to do with 430? How are we going to make 430 work? Where did this 430 years come from? Okay, so let's stop the screen share. Did I stop the screen share already? Okay. So what are we supposed to do about this 430? So Rashi gives an answer, which is not super convincing. Rashi says, as I mentioned before when Marty asked his question, Rashi says 400 years goes from the timing of when Yitzchak was born, and 430 years goes back to the time of the decree. Namely, the decree is made 430 years before the Exodus. There's 30 years between when the decree is issued and when Yitzchak is born. And then from there, 400 years. So I'll write this out in the chat to make it easier to see. What we're basically saying is that in the year 2018, the decree is made. In the year 2048, Yitzchak is born. And the year 2448 is the Exodus. So it comes out, it's 400 years from Yitzchak to the Exodus, and 430 years from the decree to the Exodus. That's Rashi's answer. I don't know. It seems kind of complicated. Ramban, in his Bible commentary, actually says that the extra 30 years is a 30-year punishment that the Jewish people were kept in Egypt 30 years longer than what they were supposed to. And we started with Chaim offering for us the tradition that they spent 210 years in Egypt. And Ramban in this pasuk says, how do we balance between the 400 and the 430? He actually says that the Jewish people spent 240 years in Egypt. According to Ramban, all of the marriage documents have the wrong date and the exercise that we engaged in before. Ramban says, how else do you explain 400 years and 430? It must be that the Jewish people were supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. They weren't ready. They spent an extra 30 years in Egypt as a punishment. And so it comes out that according to the Ramban Nachmanides, he's no lightweight. According to the Ramban Nachmanides, we actually have our calendars wrong by 30 years' time. Now, I want to go on a slight digression to just point out that there's a major question behind this about the nature of the Jewish people at the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Are they righteous? Were they wicked? Were they just okay? You see, according to the suggestion that Ben made at the start of the class, the Jewish people are in Egypt for, are supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years, but then they get to go out early, 210 years early. I mean, that implies that the Jewish people were tremendously righteous. Like Hashem, you know, said to them, you're supposed to be slaves for 400 years, but through their cries and through their prayers, etc., they ended up spending less time in Egypt. And then you have Rashi on the Ramban, rather, at the other level. The Ramban is saying, as we see in the chat, low level of Sha'arei Tumah, the Ramban says, no, they weren't righteous that they were able to stay in Egypt for less time. Ramban says that actually they were not so good and they had to spend in Egypt 30 extra years. So the question of how you evaluate the dates and how long they spent in Egypt also has behind it how we look at the Jewish people as a nation. Stephen Zychik in the chat is making an additional question. According to Rashi, why did the 30 years begin from the decree and not from when Avram went down to Egypt the first time? So, Stephen, Avraham is 75 when he goes down to Egypt the first time. And if the 430-year clock starts when Avram Avinu goes down, we still have a problem of 5 years because there's 25 years between when Avram goes down to Egypt and when Yitzchak is born, and we have to make up 30 years. So that's why Rashi says that actually we have to suggest that it's actually from when the decree was made and not when Avram went down to Egypt the first time. Okay, Stephen Zychik gives a thank you. Okay. Now, there's just one further problem with this one. This is really complicated. I apologize that it's complicated. There's just one problem with this idea that the count begins at the time of the decree. If the 400 years start when Yitzchak is born, and the decree has to happen 30 years beforehand, which is what Rashi says, then how old does Avram have to be at the time of the decree of the 400 years? Okay, Ellen used her fingers. Nissan used the chat, said the same thing. Avram has to be 70. Well, what's the problem with saying that Avram is 70? Now we have to go back to Bereishis, back to Parshas Lech Lecha, and we'll see the problem with saying that Avraham is 70 at the time of the decree. Here again is a link if you want to click the link, and we will share the screen. This is where we first meet Avraham Avinu. Vayomer Hashem al Avram, Hashem says to Avram, Lech lecha mi'artzecha mi'latetecha mi'beis avicha, leave your father's house and your birth country, el ha'aretz asher areka, to the place that I'm sending you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing, and I will curse those who curse you, and bless those who bless you. And Avram wells, as Hashem said to him, Ve'Avraham ben chamesh shanim v'shivim shana b'tzeito mecharan. Avram is 75 when he comes to Israel. According to the Ramban, there's no problem. According to the Ramban, Abraham goes to Israel at age 75, has the covenant between the parts, gets a decree of 400 years from when Yitzchak is born. Yitzchak is born in the year 2048. 400 years later, the decree is done. The Jews are supposed to leave Egypt. They sinned. So 30 years later, the Jews leave. That's the view of the Ramban, and it doesn't create any complicated math. However, according to Rashi, we have a problem. Marty in the chat writes, Rabbi Lichtev once gave a shir about this dating for Torah and Moshe a number of years ago. I don't remember all the details, but somehow he lined up the Torah and the Greek calendars. So the calendars are very complicated here. Rashi's solution to the problem is to say that Avram actually went on a pilot trip. You know, these days when people make Aliyah, they usually will go to Israel first for a pilot trip. You know, they'll interview, try to get a job. They'll go and they'll try to find a place to live. You know, they'll see what it's like. Sometimes they'll go for a month, see how much they like it. They go for a pilot trip first. And Rashi actually says that that happened to Avram Avinu too. That when Avram Avinu is 70, he goes and visits Israel and gets the decree. So 70 is Abraham's pilot trip to Israel. And he hears the decree of 400 years. Then when Abraham is 75, we have Abraham formally hears Hashem's command and goes to Israel. That's when he's 75. And then when Abraham is 100, we have Yitzchak being born and the count of 400 begins. So, you know, in a Parsha Shir, the goal isn't to vote at the end of the Parsha Shir which explanation we like best, but the Ramban doesn't have this problem. See, the view that they spent 400 years in Egypt just does not work with the lineage in Parshat Vayera. They could not have spent 400 years in Egypt. Ramban's solution is that they spent 240 years in Egypt. Rashi's solution with the complicated Avram went on a pilot trip. Did anyone raise your hand if you knew that Avram made a pilot trip? It's a very complicated thing that Rashi suggests in order to make all the years work out. And maybe that's why, you know, people don't like Rashi. But, you know, again, if you follow anybody besides Rashi, you have to redate all of your documents, which I don't know that anybody wants to be running and doing, you know, now, and changing everybody's documents. Okay. I have two other, small pieces to this puzzle to talk about, but I want to pause for questions because we had a lot of detail. So let's pause a second for questions. And then after that, we can go back to the last two detail pieces here. Nissan.
Thank you. I recall that there's a somewhat similar machloket between Rashi and Ramban about Yitro's arrival later in Jewish time. But was it before Matan Torah or after? I'm pretty sure that Ramban reads the Torah the way it's written and Yitro came afterwards. But Rashi, you know, says, well, it must be before. So it, I see a parallel.
So that is correct.
No,
you are correct. In Vayikra chapter 18, Ramban says that the entirety of Vayikra chapter 18, of Shmot chapter 18 happens before Shmot chapter 19. And Rashi says it's not exactly in order. And here also we have Ramban saying that Bereishis chapters 12, 13, and 14 go before 15. and Rashi say that it goes out of order. So, yes, this is Rashi and Ramban playing somewhat familiar roles. Okay, Ben writes, this kind of attention to far too much detail may be harmful to belief and practice. Torah is about ideas, how to live a good life, not dying when eating a forbidden fruit now or in the future. So thank you, Ben, for that important, correction here. Everybody, when you leave this shiur, you should say, wow, this is such an interesting question. Were the Jews in Egypt sinners who deserve to be punished with extra time in Egypt, or were they righteous people that God took them out earlier than necessary? That's the kind of take-home lesson that you could really think about for the next 24 hours leading up into Shabbos, and then you could talk about it in your Friday night dinner table. The details, if you spend the whole time thinking about the details, you may miss some of the bigger message. And the bigger message about the spiritual state of our ancestors in Egypt is a much more important question. Yechezkel, in his prophecies, describes how the Jewish people were in Egypt. And it's not pretty. Yechezkel says that a prophet came to the Jewish people in Egypt and said, Yechezkel says, you're sinners. A prophet had to go to the Jews and say, what are you doing? Rashi in Parshat Bo says that the reason why the Jewish people had the mitzvah of a Korban Pesach was because they weren't yet meritorious to be redeemed. So there's a lot of evidence behind the idea that they weren't ready. And there's a lot to be said about that with the Ramban's idea that they, had to spend extra time in Egypt because they weren't ready yet. But we're not going to vote, and I'm not going to tell you which position I prefer. I just think there's what to think about regarding that deeper question. Okay. I think we don't have questions. And so now we can talk about the next piece. And that is why Bereshit Tedvav. Oh, we got another comment. Then your point is well taken. Namely, I shouldn't be so critical of the Jewish people. If they're slaves in Egypt, then, sometimes they're under duress and that's why they're doing what they're doing. That's a fair point. I want us to just take a look at another interesting thing regarding this whole business of the Ramban and the Rashi and the 400 years and the 430 years. And that is by going back to Bereishis chapter 15. This is something that you may not have noticed because it's a detail, but it's not a trivial one. This is Bereishit chapter 15. Achar Dvarim Ha'elah, after a war between four kings and five kings, and Avram gets involved. Hayadvar Hashem al Avram b'chazeli mor, God comes to Avram in a vision. Al tira Avram, fear not, anochi magen lach, I am your shield. That's why we recite a blessing of Magen Avraham in the Shemona Esrei. It's based on this pasuk. Hashem says to Avraham, I am your Magen, your shield. Tzchachar be'me'od, you will get a very big award. And Avraham says, how am I going to, how do I know this is going to happen? And Hashem says in pasuk Dalet, v'nei dvar Hashem elav le'mor, lo yirashcha zeh. Hashem says, Eliezer will not inherit you. Your child will inherit you. God brings Avram outside. He says, go up and count the stars. Can you count them? And Avram believes in God. Okay, could somebody tell me, what is the time during this prophecy in the beginning of chapter 15? What time is it? He counts the stars.
The words "vayachshavea" can mean, and he calculated. It could be two calculations.
That's very good. Can we go with 10 p.m.? Because it said he counted the stars. Sound good? 10 p.m.? Okay. So it's 10 p.m. And do you know where your children are? No, it's 10 p.m. And Avram Avinu is in the middle of this, and he believes in God. Now let's read Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer Elav, Hashem says to Abraham, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem who took you out of Ur Kasdim. What's wrong with this Pasuk? Hashem saying, I am Hashem who took you out of Ur Kasdim. What happened to Psukim ago? He's having a whole conversation. Avram calls him Hashem Elokim. He refers to him by Hashem's name. They have the whole conversation. And then Hashem says, I am Hashem, in the middle of the conversation. If that pasuk wasn't problematic enough, look at pasuk Chet. Vayomar, Hashem Elokim b'mai daki irashena. Avram says, give me a sign. What is he saying? Give me a sign. He just said, the Torah just said, ve'amin b'Hashem, he believed in Hashem. He believed in Hashem. Why does he need a sign? All right. Anyway, Hashem says, here's your sign, offer a sacrifice. Pasuk Tet. Hashem says, take this animal, take that animal. He takes the animals, he cuts them. Pasuk Yudbet. Vayihi Hashemesh Lavo. The sun was Lavo. What does Lavo mean? About to set. What time is it? If it says that the sun was about to set. It only sets in Pasuk Yitzayin by Hi Hashemesh Ba'a. So what time is it? Did the sun set or did the sun not set? Anyone ever noticed this before? Crazy thing. The beginning of the story, it's night because he's counting the stars. In the end of the story, it's the daytime because the sun hasn't set yet. The beginning of the conversation, he believes in God. At the end of the story, he doesn't believe in God. So part of why I'm not so bothered by Rashi's idea to jiggle the order is because we're going to have to do something to solve these various textual problems with that story anyway. And given these other problems, the story, the sun, it looks as though there are actually two stories. And that half of that chapter is happening at one point in time, and half of the chapter is happening at another point in time. And therefore, it doesn't bother me so much to say that it is out of order. Let's see. There are a few more comments in the chat. Now, Annie points out a word in the Torah that is kates, which is 190. 400 minus 190 gets to 210. So yes, in the Seder we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chishev et haketz. God calculated the kates. The gematria of kates is 190. That midrash agrees with the 210, which again is what all of our marriage documents say. You know, if you have the Jewish people, this much of the Jewish people have said we were in Egypt for 210. I'm like, this is like a tiny group of people who were like, no, it's a different amount. So yes, that Kate's idea is consistent with the 210.
And the words chishev et haketz can be an allusion to vayachshev elul litzaka, the shortening of the 13 years.
Yes, that vayachshev elul litzaka. Excellent, Gershon. That the tzaka that Abraham granted to Hashem was through the vayachashveha, through the math that Hashem lowered the 400 to the 190. Okay, Steve Zychek suggests that the sun rose in the middle of the chapter, which could be, but if the chapter is happening at like 5 in the morning, so you still see the stars at 5 in the morning, and then the sun rose, you have the next problem, which is that the sun sets in verse 17. So there isn't enough time. It can't happen just in the morning, because then the sun will rise, but there isn't enough time. There's too many hours between when the sun rises and when the sun would set. Muriel has mentioned a previous year that it was daytime when Avram was told to count the stars. That's another possible solution to the problem. I just prefer to say the whole story. It's two different stories. And Marty Crossell says, there's a bigger question, I think. If the enslavement of Egypt was predetermined, how do we say that we went down to Egypt because of Yosef's sin? Right. So if it is predetermined, it wasn't because of the sin. And that sounds like an excellent topic to recommend for a future Parsha Shir in another occasion. To summarize, we already talked about the take home, about whether the Jewish people were in Egypt because of their sins, you know, lengthening and shortening. And I think the other thing, another important take home is never jump to a conclusion about what is the pshat, the simple explanation, and what is the midrash. I mean, if you open up your Chumash to one page, you might say that based on this page, one explanation is the pshat and one is the drash. But if you turn to a different page, you know, you might have a different approach. And Moshe Rabbeinu's lineage in Parshat Vayera establishes the idea of 210. So that's a second, you know, possible take home. And maybe when you hear next the lineage of Moshe Rabbeinu being read, you'll have greater appreciation for the list of names and random numbers. And maybe the next time you hear Parshat Lech Lecha and Bereishit chapter 15 read, you'll have a greater appreciation for the question of, is chapter 15 one story, two stories, sun, stars? Is Avram 75? Is Avram 70? Is he in Israel? Is he not in Israel? And also, you know, now you can keep it in your back pocket that at the Seder, you can sort of spring the question on your Seder guests and ask them, how long did the Jewish people were in Egypt? 400, 430, 210, 240, many different possibilities, and definitely a lot to think about.
Thank you.
What's your final number? What is the final number?
See, my question, of course, not we don't have time now. The real question for me is why the Torah does all this. In other words, why did the Torah basically contradict itself and basically give us so many? And this question comes up in so many different areas. And that always, for me, is the interesting question. What's the point of the Torah doing all this? And there is a point. But anyways, that's the other question for the Pesach Seder that can keep you going all night. You know, why might we count the exile from Abraham? Why might we count it from Yitzchak? Why might we count it from Yaakov? It's very different, right? What does Galut mean? And, you know, clearly the Torah always does this. The Torah sort of always contradicts itself, and then you always have to ask why. But anyways, that's the second level, if I can say that. I don't know if you want to comment on that at all for Regal Echad. You don't have to, but I'm just saying.
On Regal Echad, you know, I heard once this idea of 400 years for an era. Right. The second temple is 420 years. The first temple is 410 years. Between the Exodus and the building of the temple is 480 years. This idea of thinking in terms of eras. So I heard that idea once, that the Torah packages the decree as 400 years to encourage us to think of things in terms of 400 year eras. But your question is better than the answer, because, you know, yeah, why doesn't the Torah tell us? It's like a pretty important question. Why does the Torah not tell us?
And also, like, we don't know if they left Egypt in the day or at night. The Torah contradicts itself there also. And what I find amazing on the same pasuk, 430 years at night, like, who cares? Like, you know, like they left it after 430 years. Do we care if it's a day or the night when you leave? But then, you know, the Torah contradicts itself. Of course, 400 is also the amount that Avram paid for to bury Sarah, and it's also the amount of slaves of the army of Esav. It's not a coincidence. Those are the three 400s in the Chumash. So you have to ask yourself. And I'm just throwing out all this stuff. Once you talk to numerology, I think it's amazing. You know, 137, 137, like both, Levi and Amram lived to 137, which is like a weird number, as does Yishmael. So I have read a whole of our Torah on that once, right? And Yishmael also lives to 137. Clearly the Torah is linking Yishmael with Levi and Amram, and yet Kat lives to 133. Like, it's a little bit weird. Why can't God live to be 137? You know what I'm saying? I don't think it was a medical issue, like he died 4 years earlier, like, because nobody else does the Torah tell us there how long they lived. So the Torah is doing all kinds of, like, really things that I don't think we, any of us were taught when we learned Chumash in high school or in yeshiva, if we learned Chumash in yeshiva. You know, they don't focus on these questions, but they're really fascinating questions. Why the Torah throws in details by A, but not by B. Like, you know, why don't we know how long this person lived? The whole thing is so fascinating. Okay. It's after 9:30, so people are going to get, okay. Yeah. Anybody else want to, if anybody has any ideas on this, I'm just throwing out.
400 years, 10 generations.
You could also say that.
So the problem is that the pasuk right after 400 years says, Vidor Rivi'i Yashuvuhena.
Right. You didn't even address that issue.
Yeah, I didn't even address Dor Rivi'i, but like one of the other proofs that, 400 years seems to be too long is that Dor Rivi'i seems to make, you know, make more sense with a shorter period than a longer period. Because, Eric, I agree. If it would have said Dor Asiri, then it would have made perfect sense, you know, 10 generations and such.
There's also a question how you count Dor Rivi'i. That's also a big machloket. Who are the four generations? But okay. All right. Any other comments? Otherwise,
yes. I just want to thank, in general, for a great shiur in Chabur, but also for gently correcting me. Umoshah b'nei Yisrael show Yeshua Mitzrayim. That has an etznachta too. So when the Torah then says Shloshim Shavah Rabbi Yotshana, that's not so problematic. It doesn't mean necessarily that the entire amount of the 430 were in Egypt, even in the Book of Exodus. It, like you said, very gently, Umoshah b'nei Yisrael show Yeshua Mitzrayim. That's they had a settlement in Mitzrayim, but the amount of years are not necessarily 430.
Okay, thank you, Nissen. Always an excellent Balkori, Nissen. You know, the Medaktek, that Nachta, that's a whole other series we did a while back, of course, on how Tamei HaMikra influenced. But okay, I want to thank you, and tomorrow morning, of course, my shiur on the Siddur back at its regular time, 9:15 a.m. Tomorrow morning, we'll be finishing up the second paragraph of the Shema. Everybody's welcome. Next week, in addition to all our regular shiur, we'll be starting two new series. I just sent out an email, actually, about that. But Yosef Lindell, who's going to be giving a five-part series, I think it's a fascinating thing on lost synagogue books. And he's going to be, you know, the books we all used to use but don't use anymore. So this week, he's going to be talking about the Herz Chumash and the polemics, what happened to the Herz Chumash that I think everybody here used as a kid, but probably nobody uses anymore. And on Wednesday, Shlomo Brody is going to be starting. He's, you know, he just published a book on military ethics. Unfortunately, coincidentally, I don't know what the word is coming out at this time, but this book has been in the works, obviously, beforehand on military ethics. He'll be giving a three-part series. So he'll be talking on purity of arms. That's going to be Wednesday at 2:30 after Shuli Mishkin's class, who just started her series on the gates of Gaza. So that'll be our two new series starting next week. All the regular classes, Menachem Liebtag, Mark Shapiro, Rabbi Shulman, et cetera, et cetera. Next Thursday night, Rabbi Nachbar, Rabbi Nachbar, who teaches at GPATS at Stern, will be giving the Parsha Shir. Okay, any questions, comments, Vakasha, and want to wish everybody well. And we should hear good news, Besorot Tovot. And okay, Laila Tov. By the way, you got to all the questions in the chat, right? I think you covered them all.
Am I correct?
Yeah. Just want to. Okay, Laila Tov, everybody.
Thank you.
Well, okay.
Thank you
so much for coming. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for hosting me.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Our pleasure, always. Okay.